I want to welcome Agile XRM to the podcast. I've known the people at Agile XRM for the past 12 years. I've seen how their business process management tool can add massive value to complex organizational processes in sectors such as finance and government. If you have complex processes or a need for dialogues on the Power Platform or Dynamics 365, take a look at how this BPM tool can add value. You can find them at agilexrm.com or check out the show notes for more details. Welcome to the Power Platform Show. Thanks for joining me today. I hope today's guest inspires and educates you on the possibilities of the Microsoft Power Platform. Now, let's get on with the show. In this episode, we're going to be focusing on contracting, freelancing, and we'll sprinkle in a bit of Power Pages to the mix as well. Today's guest is from Bolton, England in the United Kingdom. He's a solution architect and Power Platform developer and freelancer specializing in Power Pages, has contributed to multiple upgrade projects aimed at tuning functional but click-heavy systems into enjoyable visual dashboards and process-driven user experience. He brings creative ideas, energy, enthusiasm, with a commitment to raising standards, improving user experience, and driving user adoption. You can find links to his bio and social media in the show notes for this episode. Welcome to the show, Franco.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me. Very happy with that intro.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I was just saying before we jumped on, I love when I'm, you know, having a chat with a guest that I've met in real life, which is kind of a novelty after COVID. And of course, we just caught up recently in Canada. I think our first meeting was brunch at a nice little cafe there. And so good to see you. Just like, what, 4 weeks? Is it 4 weeks since we were in Canada? About that?
Yeah, it's zoomed by. Absolutely.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy.
Sorry, I was just going to say it was awesome to meet you in person and to get you almost to myself for a bit. And
it was fun.
Chew the fat.
It was fantastic. It was fun. I always love hearing people's stories and how they've got to where they've got to on their, you know, their Power Platform journey. And so it was good listening to you. Tell me, food, family, and fun, what do they mean to you?
Well, they usually pretty much come all as one. I'm from a crazy big Sicilian family. We used to have the massive get-togethers. There's nothing but noise and passion and way, way, way too much catering. So we'll do that just as often in the UK as we will over in Sicily. There's nice. Usually a whole tribe of us in Sicily for the whole school holidays. And yeah, so but when I'm not with the family, I'm traveling in some sense or another, whether that's with the fam or it's solo for the community gigs. The goal is one day we'll just have friends on every continent, if not in every country. An open door, whoever we want to party with that month, wherever we want to work, whether coastline is calling our name, we've got an open door. We've got some people to party with.
I love it. I love it. And I love that, you know, a career in this space is allowing that type of lifestyle, which I'm seeing more and more.
Yeah, because back in the day for me, there was none of that glamorous side. It was very much, I just saw the train station and the office building and I'd spend my whole weekends traveling for that. But for the wrong kind of travel. So yeah, from about 2018, I just cut the ties from the office, went to Thailand first, did many different stops. I did the obnoxious thing where I'd send a picture of me working from the hammock and half lubricating on cocktails and stuff just to make everyone a bit jealous.
Jealous.
To show them they can do it as well.
Perfect. Perfect. Tell us about your career journey. How did you ultimately get into what you specialize in now? But where did it really start? Where did your start in IT come about and bring us right up to modern day?
Yeah, so I've had a twisty, turny journey, really. I've worked in just about every industry imaginable. I didn't get into IT until relatively late. My family's background was in bars and nightclubs, the leisure side of things, but I think I was just about the right age for Windows 95 coming along. So I was kind of the kid that knew how to do, whether it was fixing the printer, making the flyers, building the website, exploring what email means. I'd be doing that stuff unofficially. I'd always end up doing a bit of training as part of that, again, unofficially. So I was barman or in charge of stacking up the fridges or helping the DJ with the PA system or whatever. But yeah, unofficially, I'd be saying, well, this is how you use Excel, this is how you use Outlook or your BlackBerry or whatever outdated tech we used at the time. This is how the millennium bug's going to affect us. And then I was running an animation studio independently. I did animation and special effects at uni.
Wow.
And yeah, I was just arsing about a little bit, to be honest, taking it too easy. My dad just came in one day, threw the newspaper down. He's a bit of a forceful chap. They just pick a job out of there, apply for it, and don't give me any, don't give me any back tap. So I was like, okay, picked a job at random. Mm-hmm. It was IT trainer. So I thought, yeah, I can probably wing it at that. And yeah, just randomly, one of the packages I was asked to train on was Dynamic CRM. And at the time, I had no idea that you can customize it, that there was the XRM stuff that it applied to all these other industries. And then further down the line, when portals came along, it was like a happy marriage. So I've done, got my graphics background, done bits of web stuff before. All my customers had hit those bottlenecks with the processes that, right, I can only deal with your company 9 to 5. Then when I do, I ring up and the person that's dealing with my case isn't in. So there's no one to kick that workflow along. So yeah, when I heard of Dynamic CRM portals, it was just like, boom, just made for me, made for my customer processes, because it's all very much a case management background. I was loving it just from day one. I wanted to master it.
So what version of portals did you start on?
It was Dynamic CRM portals. So I think it was the first incarnation where it was Microsoft at the helm. Mm-hmm. So where you'd have the portal management app rather than have to do everything in code and and build SPX and that kind of thing.
Interested to get your opinion on, you know, because at that point Microsoft had just acquired it from ADX Studios, and the lead on that was a guy called Shan MacArthur, who's still, of course, in Microsoft now. You know, how did you feel about all the portal management being done from a model-driven app directly inside the back then, the CRM interface?
Yeah, well, funnily enough for me, that was ideal, because mm-hmm. I knew model-driven, well, not, I don't think they were even branded as model-driven apps back then, but I knew Dynamics inside out, and I knew XRM and workflows. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it made a lot of sense to me, and it was so easy to go and explore those advanced settings. Whereas I think now we've got the shiny new design studio, and I think people have got less and less reasons to go and have a dig around at the advanced settings. So you miss a lot of the power that you get out of the box, unless you know to look there.
Yeah. You know, being that that's been your journey across those various iterations. So it went from Dynamics 365, what was it? Power Portal, was it? No, it was just called Portals, Dynamics 365 Portals, right? Then it became Power Portals. And then Power
Apps. I think
Pages,
it was Dynamics CRM portals, then Power Apps portals, but everyone just called them Power Portals, it seems.
And now Power Pages.
It was a perfect naming for me. Did precisely what it said on the tin.
Yeah, exactly.
No one's ever come for me asking for a Power Pages site. They specifically want a portal, even to this day.
Nice. How do you.
But yeah,
how,
so much of the power was there from day one.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. No, you're on the money. And, you know, if I look at what Shan designed back then, was this idea that, you know, you could service data to the logged in person specific to them. And that was a powerful use case. One of my biggest original customers was a temporary recruitment company, and they wanted all their onboarding of candidates and customers all to go through a portal. So, you know, back then it was the portals tool. I think that might have even been pre-Microsoft's ownership. And it was perfect. It changed the game of their business. And this, I'm talking about back in pre-2008, because I know the global financial crisis hit. And if he never had that portal in place, his business would have gone under, because everything was automated through the portal. And one of the things that enabled that organization is that when a candidate had submitted their timesheets via the portal, it automatically generated an invoice, right, in Dynamics. And the customer would get a notification, they'd go into the portal and approve it. As soon as the portal had done the approval, within 24 hours it did a direct debit from their bank account. And so he had been in an industry model of 90 plus days of age debtors, and that went to zero overnight. You know, it just transformed, and that's where the power of portals just blew my mind. You know, at that point I could see, wow, this applies to so many organizations.
Yeah, well, for context, at that same time, I was still having to fax my timesheet in.
Yeah.
Once I'd got it signed, which was by somebody that wasn't usually on site, I was trapped in my first foray into Dynamics was IT trainer, mm-hmm. so I was usually trapped in a training room somewhere completely inconvenient for getting signatures or accessing a fax machine. So I'd have been all over that. I'd have loved it even more from an earlier date.
Yeah. we ultimately got it to the point where the time sheeting was all done biometrically with Wi-Fi enabled and even SIM enabled biometric scanners. So staff could just put their finger on at, you know, because when I say temporary placement, it was like, let's say it was a big sports game and they were serving the drinks. And so you'd get 50 people on staff, but they're only on staff for 4 hours or 6 hours, the, you know, around the game. And so you'd use biometrics to make it really just, they didn't have to work out their, what was my login or anything. And we just updated that all through to the portal and away laugh it. So it was cool.
Sweet, love it.
Mm. Tell me about, how do you talk to customers about portal? And you know, sometimes what I'm angling for here is that I see people go, I'm going to build my website on portal. I'm like my information website, my blog, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm kind of adverse to that. How do you explain it?
Yeah, I totally agree. First of all, I wouldn't take on that kind of work. There's plenty of times I'll have the conversation and just say, not only thanks, but no thanks, but I advise you not to do it.
Mm.
But usually I'm in a good position that when customers come to me, they've already done the business case, calculated the ROI. And for that reason, really, it is about a business case. It is about cutting hours or weeks or days out of a process. So I think if the same rigor went, same calculations went into someone to do it just for, say, brochureware or a marketing site,
yeah,
or trying to replace a whole corporate website with Power Pages, it probably would be stopped in its tracks. But yeah, usually for me, they've already decided on the stack. They've already worked out that security works and all of that. And usually the final bit to get them over the line is they want some pre-sales work. They want to see, do they all have to look as bad as the Microsoft examples? Can we make it look like the corporate site? Can we show some examples of the art of the possible? And I absolutely love that kind of work.
Yeah.
Because everyone's so enthused, aren't they, at the start of the project?
Yeah.
So if you can get involved when everyone's buzzing about it, and really they're rooting for the platform. They're not looking to spend that pre-sales money to be proven wrong and saying, oh, you know,
yeah,
dodge the bullet. It's about, come on, show us what it can do. And so often what I'll do in that, sometimes it'll be as little as 2 days, sometimes it'll be 2 weeks. But what I'll do will be a really good glimpse into what the end project will look like.
Nice.
And it's more just about maybe cutting out a few click-heavy parts or working out, well, the volume is in this specific area, so that's where we're going to spend the customizations.
Yeah.
But I've done so many portal projects now that I've got great examples already of, if you want to see an MVP portal, I've got plenty of those to show. If they want to see kind of an intermediate one, an advanced one, mm-hmm, right up to, right, we've got millions to throw at this, what can it, yeah, look like? So
you've got a portfolio.
So much easier now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. You know, I've always said that if a power app looks like a power app, you've done it wrong, right? If I can see it, so you've used a power app, you know, tooling to do it. And I even feel it more so if I look at a portal and I know they're using Power Pages, I'm like, okay, so there's not enough design work being done, not enough UX, UI, that type of thing being incorporated into what's been done. And, you know, I like it when the only way that I get the giveaway is to look at the URL string, right? If everything else is,
yeah, absolutely,
so schmick, right? I'm like, that's a good design portal.
Yeah, 100% agree. And even with the out-of-the-box configurable components, so for my more MVP kind of portals, it will be, we'll base it on the list experience, the multi-step form experience, but I'm going to elevate it so much with things like drag and drop controls,
yeah,
like REST API integrations, output the list as cards, that you're getting all the benefits of the configurable components, but the look and feel and the number of clicks is just next level.
Yeah, fantastic. Listen, the reason we were going to have a chat on this podcast was around contracting and freelancing, and I have noticed this movement almost in the community globally where more and more people that might be working for big traditional companies are starting to have side hustles. They're starting to earn money on the side, doing their own thing, having their own, you know, clients, often in totally different geographies, and then ultimately they go, you know what? I could just do this as a freelance, right? I could do this, you know, as an independent consultant. They take on that type of moniker. What was your journey to going away from traditional partner land or working for a consultancy and going out on your own?
Yeah, good question. So there's a few levers that led me towards that. So part of it was the shadow of the IR35 changes coming along, that we want to be seeing that, for example, we want to show that it's very much project-based, that you've got a spread of different clients, that you can't be seen as a full-time employee, that you're not necessarily using their equipment or being on their site. So that kind of started a number of the decisions going for why move away from contracting. And I've never had a permanent job within the IT space, so that wasn't a decision for me. But I did find with my contracts, I was getting more and more specialized. I'd kind of, to keep the job interesting, I think I'm going to kind of reinvent or rewrite my job title each year, or sometimes less than that, every 6 months. And portals, as I said, really took my interest. So I went from being a generalist pretty much overnight from one project to next, being a generalist dynamics functional consultant and solution architect, over to being purely a portals developer. I've always been busy. Everything comes through LinkedIn. But ever since I specialized in Power Pages or portals at the time, that's when the phone just never stopped ringing. And I had much more command over my rate, because it was like, well, there's 200 of you that have applied for this role, so we're pretty much going to go for lowest of costs, yeah, that's got some experience. Whereas now I'm bigger fish in a smaller pond, and I'm delivering very specific skills, quite often where I'm a one-person team. Whereas when I was in the contracting space, the resourcing was so bad, because there's one thing against Power Pages is there's a very small talent pool. Mm-hmm. So I'd come into the promise was that it would, right, so giant nationwide project, and you're going to have a team of 20, and then it turns out, well, only one of you will have the skills.
Yeah.
19 will be testers,
yeah,
that have no idea what they're going to test. We'll have a PM that has no idea what a project plan for portals would look like, mm-hmm, and maybe a BA that's never worked with portals before. So essentially, I was being paid less than money to be a one-person team on behalf of a Microsoft partner, and I thought, well, why not do it for myself? And like so many people breaking into freelancing, I think you see as well that where the value is. So for all the busy work on a project, what is actually moving the needle? What is delivering the value to the customer? What are the pain points? What are going to be the obstacles before the project even starts? And I think there's so much value built into that. So I found, if I can get on the phone with a client, mm-hmm, I would always get the contract. Whereas if it was just based on what's on paper, what's a LinkedIn profile, what's the daily rate, maybe not as much. But yeah, I totally agree with what you said. So many people wanting to move away from it. I think there's been, away from permanent work, or at least have some career insurance. I think that feeling of job security you get with a permanent role has definitely been shaken up in the last couple of years. The amount of layoffs have been,
yeah,
like you say, or even if it's side hustles, everyone feels the cost of living increase. It's bonkers when you think, well, I could work an extra 50 days this year in my permanent role and maybe just about break even. Mm-hmm. Or even when I was contracting, I'd offer to do overtime to pick up the slack, and that'd be met with suspicion. Well, why would you want to do that? What do you think is going wrong? And but I can see the problem in the project. I'm trying to fix it. If you want to hold me back, I don't understand where that's coming from. So yeah, I think people in permanent jobs would probably get similar reluctance. That's why you got to start to look outside. And I think the better you are, the better you treat customer, the nicer taste you'd leave in the mouth, the easier it is to get that ongoing work. So I'd always get the question, in fact, during contracts, what's the off-ramp sort of thing? So you deliver this for us, we go live, we've not got an internal team that's skilled up in portals. How do we have that ongoing relationship with you? So when I did break into freelancing, I pretty much had a backlog of customers that did always want some ongoing work.
So I'm going to ask you some specific questions around the mechanics of freelancing. And it's just so that folks listening can start, if they're thinking this way, they can start, you know, learning. Do you have your own site where people can go and see a portfolio of your work, that or that you can point to if you're on a call with somebody and they're like, what would you do here? And you've got examples? Is that what you've got set up?
Yeah, I've pretty much got a portfolio of examples, but I never just share out the links.
No.
It's get on a call with me, yes, and I'll walk you through it, because I want to make sure, first of all, that I'm hearing your pain points in your own language. So even if you don't go ahead with me, I've still got some value out of the call.
Yeah.
And I want to highlight while I'm showing you, here are the pain points, here are the bits that really took the effort, here are the bits that are the massive time savers.
Yeah. And so then when
Carry on. Sorry, I'd just say I'd highly recommend whenever you can get in conversation with a potential customer, do that. Don't just rely on emails or job posts or whatever.
Perfect. How do you work out how you're going to bill or invoice the customer? Or actually, let's go start at the quoting stage. Do you do pricing for the what I call outcomes-based pricing? So, hey, this is what you've asked for. It is X, and you'll handle your time, et cetera, and these will be the milestone deliverables, blah, blah, blah. Or do you go, hey, it's my rate is X per hour, and it's going to be, I estimate X number of hours, and you know, if it goes over, it'll be more. If it's less, it will be less. How do you handle those type of sizing a project, you know, from a financial perspective for yourself?
Yeah, so again, there's a lot of conversation that goes into that, but it's probably a blend of the two, largely. That I'm much keener on the value-based pricing than the outcome-based pricing. Mm-hmm. But still, clients will still want some idea of how many days does that work out as and what's the daily rate. And again, I'll field a lot of inquiries by just, I'll put them off with the day rate.
Yeah.
And that's sounding obnoxious, but.
Yeah, no, but perfect.
Plenty of people will say, well, why don't you just do it for half the price and get the extra exposure? I've done all that nonsense in contracting. Whereas for me, I know I'm going to deliver a fantastic product. I know that all my clients become repeat customers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm happy to be kind of reassuringly expensive.
Yeah, yeah, perfect. How do you – I take it you work across any geography. So, you know, although you're based in the UK, you work on US gigs, you work on really wherever the work is, right? I would assume in today's world – there's no time zone conflict or anything like that that would really allow you to work anywhere on any project.
Absolutely, yeah. So I've worked in Thailand for UK customers. Mm-hmm. That worked really nicely just because I happened to want to go to Thailand.
Yeah.
But we'd have, say, our offshore Indian development team. They'd do certain hours, do a drop to me. Mm-hmm. I'd QA it, provide some feedback, add some value before the UK team come online.
Yeah.
And that just... coincidental, it sounds like it was beautifully planned. It was totally coincidental, but it was just a really well-oiled machine. But yeah, so my customer base is probably equal parts Norwegian, US, and UK.
Wow. And you mentioned there the offshore development center. So in the scenario that the customer doesn't have a whole team, can you bring to the table resources that you've got relationships with also then that help build out a delivery team if you needed it?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is probably going to sound obnoxious, but usually the scenarios where I am having to interface with an offshore team, it's usually a hindrance as opposed to a help.
Right.
And I'm going to qualify that by saying the gap that I see so much in the portal space is that, first of all, lack of any custom experience.
Yeah.
So plenty of people that have delivered the out of the box precisely as it is in the Microsoft certification. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know whether it's a cultural difference or what, but people that can build what's specced out in a blueprint or a technical spec.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, the value is in being able to know what that blueprint should be. How do I take the customer goals and translate that into, well, we should build this. It means that form, these lists, this bit's custom.
Yeah.
So usually, but I would be writing out the spec, spending longer doing so than what it would take me to build it. To then have to train up the offshore resource to say, well,
yeah,
this is how you do that. These are configurable options. These are the course. Yeah, I haven't done front-end development before. So yeah, it usually meant me being the one-person team was much better value for the customer.
Yeah.
But I have got some subcontractors in mind that I've leaned on from time to time.
Nice.
But they're all onshore as it happens.
Yeah. Yep. Makes sense. You mentioned LinkedIn before as people contact you via LinkedIn. So I assume some form of word of mouth happened before that point, or are they actually just looking or doing a search for independent contractor that specializes in Power Pages? How are you, you know, are you getting a lot of work directly from, let's say, a Microsoft FTE that knows your skills and know that, hey, we need somebody that knows their stuff, and therefore you get introduced? Is it partners introducing you? Is it customers introducing other customers? How are you, you know, where's a lion's share of your business coming from on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, great question. So the lion's share is still LinkedIn, and that has been the case for 15 years.
Okay.
I have in recent times, so I'm only talking since 2022, have that good relationship with Microsoft FTEs that do send me work. And that really is for lack of many Microsoft partners that have got that custom experience, or have got the visual design chops as well as the back end stuff. I'm getting a lot out of the community as well. Mm-hmm. So happy to give, happy to help and mentor and train people up and do the conference talks, but it does all come back indirectly with work. So all good. So for example, randomly enough, all the Norwegian work that I get in results from going to a Scottish summit in 2021, I think
wow.
it was.
Wow.
Just randomly bumped into my good friend Ulrike Ekerbeck and the awesome table full of Norwegians just instantly like, oh, Franco's here, he speaks English, and just instantly switched.
Wow.
Carried on their technical in-depth conversation.
Yep.
I apologize that their English was only 99.999999%.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
I was just in awe of them.
Yeah.
And just such cool people, really nice to do business with, totally laid back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely my kind of people.
So that's an interesting thing. Do you find that, you know, going to the community conferences, the Microsoft conferences, et cetera, getting a speaking slot, that also helps increase your exposure and your potential, you know, audience base?
100%. So I immediately, for example, someone comes to me looking for advanced Power Automate work, I'd be thinking Paul Morana, Demo Bird. And that's precisely because they're giving so much to the community.
Yeah.
I've attended their sessions, been wowed by them. Kind of humbling because I thought I was pretty good at Power Automate. Like, wow, right, no, you've just shown without being cocky about it.
Yeah.
You are leagues ahead of me. Or Business Central, recently done some work with Mary Myers, just immediately thought, well, community content, Business Central, it's got to be Mary Myers. So, yeah, it definitely helps.
Yeah.
But I think more so if you've got that that specialism that springs to mind. So, like, for example, the Power Automate, the BC. It was much harder, for example, to recommend me when I was a Dynamics functional consultant.
Yes.
Because it's an incredible skill set and a really exciting role. But when you think there's so many hundreds of people, it doesn't usually come across that. Because I connect a lot of people with work.
Yeah.
It never tends to be like, Franco, do you know a really good all-rounder? It is someone that is all about the finance or all about the insurance industry, or is it all about a particular power platform tool, maybe a Power BI person and not just a generalist.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going into freelance, that's probably the easiest way to make your mark.
Final question, top five bits of advice you would give to somebody that bumped into you in a conference and said, Franco, I'm wanting to go independent. What are the first five things I need to do?
I would say pick your deadline, build your runway leading up to that. So how are you going to have plenty of customers that want to do repeat business with you by that point in time? Look back through your recent project. What was the value add? And do a bit of a case study on your LinkedIn profile. So loads of people that do reach out for mentorship with how to find work through LinkedIn. First thing I'll do, go and check out the profile. They haven't got any specialism mentioned. They've maybe got just a one-liner, worked here between these dates, worked here between these dates, nothing about here's what I contributed, here are the challenges, here was the ROI. So, yeah, I'd say that would be the next step. And then I would say learn to extract all the learning from your projects. So there's two outputs for every project I do. It's what I build and deliver, and what I learn. So that might be at the end of the project, building in time to do a case study, refine my code snippets, work back through the documents that I've been asked for that are going to be repeated on each project. Maybe that's even just extracting a project plan that I think went well, that we can say, right, well, here's everything from we've got authentication planned at the right time, we've got decisions made at the right time, we approach the portal in the right way, we've got this set of resources and JDs. The more that you can bank on that next time and build from a foundation rather than just, well, let's go to every project and build from scratch. The more profitable it is, the better it is for the customer, the more you're going to get referrals. And the repeat customers, that they're gold, not just because you're getting the extra cash from them, but you're not having to convince them from scratch. You're already front of mind. You're benefiting from having already been through the induction with them before, knowing the business inside and out. And it's just about, yeah, you're going into a friendly place. I've got customers that I've had, I think my longest serving one now is 14 years. Wow. Still got a cracking relationship with them. And I'm sure I know I'm still the first person that comes to mind for any Dynamics work. So yeah, if you can have it that way, then you don't need to advertise. I never spend the money advertising.
Franco, thanks so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. I really enjoyed chatting. I hope to catch you at another conference pretty soon.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Business Application MVP Mark Smith, otherwise known as the NZ365 Guy. If there's a guest you'd like to see on the show, please message me on LinkedIn. If you want to be a supporter of the show, please check out buymeacoffee.com/NZ365 Guy. Stay safe out there and shoot for the stars.